Well, I trust, as I've said earlier, and again, I don't apologize for repeating myself in these ways, but sometimes we need to hear things more than once, but I trust that you have been taking an opportunity this week to engage in some manner with this church-wide study. Now, I understand and I get it that we can't always be at a Tuesday night GLC group or a Wednesday night or something, and I understand that. But you're here this morning, and that is great, and I love it. But if you're looking, I would encourage you, even throughout the course of the week, find another way to be able to engage with it. And maybe it's going on Right Now Media and finding the videos there and watching and listening to what Larry has to say and being reminded of that. There's on that website, there's downloadable PDFs of some questions that you can wrestle with. I've given you questions at the end of the sermon on your sermon notes page, the bottom there, to wrestle with throughout the course of the week, to engage with the material. I don't want you to just hear something on Sunday morning and then kind of forget about it as it goes along. If you want, again, we've got the books. You can purchase those. We're not trying to make money off of books. In fact, we're not. But we want to provide the resource for you, to make them available. Download them on your Kindle or your ebook, however you want to do that. But engage with this more than just on Sunday morning. Because sometimes we miss Sunday morning, or I get going too fast and something goes by. Take the opportunity to do that. And I hope that you are doing so. So on to this morning's topic. This might sound familiar if you were here with us a few weeks ago, but I want to ask, maybe we don't need to necessarily have show of hands here a little bit, but how many of you have heard someone at some point, or maybe even yourself, say, if only I had more faith? Does that sound, if only I had more faith, then something, 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 right? Now, how many of you, in addition to that, as we look through it, again, we don't need show of hands on this one, but how many of you doubt your faith because it seems that the results you get are less than what other people seem to accomplish? I'll let that one sink in for me. How many of you doubt your faith because someone else seems to accomplish more than what you accomplish? Now, if any of you in your mind's eye put your hand up with me, let this be, then you are probably in the same boat as Larry Osborne. So there you go. You are in the same boat as somebody who preaches series on Right Now Media and writes books and speaks all across North America and through the world. It's okay company. Listen to what he has to say about his faith. In his book, he says, "I marveled at the stories of those who seemed to live above doubt. When they prayed for rain, they carried an umbrella. When I prayed for rain, I checked the weather report. If it said hot and dry, I'd put off my prayers until the next day. There's no need to make God look bad." And that's, I gotta be honest, I feel more Larry-ish than not Larry-ish sometimes. The question and the topic of faith and this message, maybe even that first question, sounds a little bit familiar. It's because I just preached on faith 2 weeks ago. And if you were here, we're talking about mustard seed, and we talked about what it meant, what that small faith component was all about. And we often get messed up because we think, man, I haven't moved any mountains, I haven't moved any mulberry trees, nothing significant has happened. I must not even have faith as big as a mustard seed, which is the smallest conceivable seed that people in Jesus' day could think of. But that's not the point. That's not what it works. When we have great faith, or when we think we have great faith, then we pray. And when God does things, we say things like, look what happened because I prayed. I had faith that would happen for you, and look what did. Look at what I have accomplished. We can get in the way of what God is doing when we think our faith is what makes the difference. It isn't what makes the difference. And so God says, you know, your faith needs to not be so big that it gets in the way of me. In fact, when your faith is small and you know you can't do it on your own and you reach out to God and say, it's beyond me, and he acts, then it is his acting, not our acting or our petition, that made God do anything. It's about him, not about me. Now, this morning, as we talk about faith, we talk about passion, the title of the chapter, the section is, You Don't Need More Faith or Passion. It sounds wrong to say in church, but there we've said it. It's out there now. It really kind of builds on what I talked about a couple weeks ago. So if you want to go back online on the website, you can listen to it if it helps to inform you. But let's see what our topic is talking about here with faith. Now, good Christian motivational books and seminars, if you happen to go into any of the conferences, they all seem to be geared towards telling you that you need more faith, or that you need help, or they're built for helping you get more faith. And you think, well, no, Ryan, I went to one that wasn't. But let me ask you, did they say, if you do these things, then your faith will increase. You will deepen in your relationship with Jesus. You will become a more faithful person. If you pray more, if you spend more time in meditation, in meditative devotions, if you read the right book, if you, you know, attend the right conference every year, if you go to the... Behind all of those messages is, here's how you get more faith. And that isn't necessarily the case. And I'm not saying there's things wrong with those, but our journey of faith doesn't always work that way. So what happens when we go to the conference and we come back and we're not bigger faith people? What happens then? Do we just say, well, I guess I must not have heard it right, and go back to the tapes and listen to it again? Or do we think there must be something wrong with me? And then doubt gets in, and we get hung up on ourselves, and we begin to question our faith, and we begin to question whether we believe in God at all, and it spirals down, and then that's not at all what God wants to do. You see, faith isn't about something, it isn't about what Osborne says is a powerful imagination or eradicating doubt or some form of mind over matter. That's what we think sometimes in the church, that if you just believe enough, if you just have enough faith, if you just, you know, just focus your faith mental abilities right, then that, you know what? Joyce did not move an inch. I was focused that Joyce would move right. You didn't know that. But I was, you know, all of, just when I was doing that, and you know, she didn't move. I must be a faith isn't about that. So a faith is about, and I touched on this a couple of weeks ago, and I want to reinforce it again this week. Faith is all about obedience. Faith is about trusting God enough with something that even though we can't see how or where it will end up or possibly could work out, we still pray or trust or act or whatever it is that God is asking us to do in that moment, because that is what obedience calls for. Let's take the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And if you're struggling with those particular names, VeggieTales has helped us out. Rack, Shack, and Benny. You can just work with there, whichever helps for translation purposes and pronunciation things. Daniel chapter 3. We know the story. We're familiar with what's going on. David read part of it for us here. Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have been elevated by King Nebuchadnezzar into positions of authority, positions of influence in Babylon. These are Jewish exiles. And along with Daniel, they've been made into and allowed to have positions of influence. And King Nebuchadnezzar, he's a bit of an egomaniac and a little high on himself. And so at one point, he builds a statue. And we know the story goes, he builds this big golden statue and he says, everybody in the kingdom, everybody in the land, when the trumpet sounds, this is why we don't have trumpets in church, people. This is in case there were tambourines involved with this as well. Just so you know why we don't have tambourines in church, it's all because of Daniel 3. It's nothing to do with my dislike of that instrument. It's all Daniel 3. But he said, whenever this music happens, everybody must stop what they are doing, turn and face this golden statue of myself, the king says, and bow down and worship it and worship me. And so they get everybody going and people are working. All of a sudden the gongs and the cymbals and everything, trumpets and lyres and tambourines start going on. And everybody stops what they're doing and they turn and face this statue. And they bow down, except for Daniel, who doesn't feature in the story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They stay standing. And King Nebuchadnezzar gets angry about this. And he gets mad at them, and he says, right, you guys, you need to follow the rules. And I want you to do this. I'll give you one more chance. But if you don't bow down to my statue when we play the song, you're going into the smelting furnace. You're done. You're cooked. And they played the music, and Rakshak and Benny stood there. They quite literally made a stand for Jesus. And the king said, right, you're done. And into the fire furnace they go. And you know how that story ends. God protects them. They walk out unharmed. And the king switches to believing in and worshiping Yahweh. It's a great motivational story. It's inspired Sunday school kids throughout the ages to do the right thing because God will see them through it. God will rescue them out of it. See, we end up putting these three guys on the Faith Hall of Fame wall. VeggieTales, as I said, makes an episode about them. Theirs is the kind of faith that we should be aspiring to. The confidence that when given a choice to either die or worship a false god, they choose neither. Trusting in full confidence that God will deliver them. Pardon me. Right? That's what we know of the story. That's how that makes sense. That's our takeaway. Is that where we usually come out with from Sunday school and things like that? That's not so much that story. That's not the takeaway we should have. They did have faith that God would deliver them, but the foundation of what they did was obedience. They didn't know how things were going to turn out. They didn't know for sure what would happen. See, often what happens is that we don't know what will happen in the end. And this is where faith or obedience comes into it. Let's take a look at closer look at some dialogue here. Now, I'm in verse 16. I didn't read these for us. So if you've got your Bibles handy, I want you to pull them out. Daniel chapter 3, verse 16 to 18. You're not going to be on the screen. I want you to listen. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, this is after the king said, you need to bow down when the music plays. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. Great. That's a great faith statement. That's fantastic. They know they're going in. It's fantastic. But listen to what it says in verse 18. But even if he doesn't, let that sink. But even if he doesn't, okay, faith is now being eroded, everybody. Right? God's not showing up the way we think he should show. Uh-oh. We want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. Obedience. No one has ever come out of the fiery furnace alive. They know what this punishment will mean. It is certain doom and death. And the story around the narrative around it even says that Nebuchadnezzar was so angry, he made the fire many, many, many times hotter than it usually is. It's so hot, in fact, that the dudes throwing these guys in got killed on the outside. Imagine their surprise when they are standing, they go in, eyes closed, and they open their eyes. Betcha they wondered if maybe they went to the wrong place. Obedience. Their obedience, their faith wasn't in trusting exactly that what was based only on what God would do or what they hoped God would do. Their faith was on obedience. This is what God has asked of us, and we will act in that regardless of the consequences, we can't see the future about. And let me tell you, God does deliver, God does release, God does protect, but often the reward for our obedience comes not in the moment, but it comes in eternity. God is pleased with us when we are obedient, but sometimes we don't get to experience the fullness of that until we have arrived in his presence for eternity, which means that something maybe has gone wrong in the present. God isn't asking us to do that. He's asking us to live in obedience. Well, there are two parts to the topic this week, faith and passion. Well, you know what faith is about. We've talked about that, but what is this passion idea, and how is Osborne connecting and suggesting that we don't need more of passion? Let me paint a picture for you. When something, a relationship, maybe a group you belong to, a hobby or whatever it may be, when something is new, right? Think back. Think back to that new first, you know, relationship, and things are just kind of getting excited and you're all Twitter-pated, or think about, you know, you've just started a new hobby and you're excited about it, or there's a new group or a new job or something like that, and you're there's this energy about this new, we get excited and we get passionate about it, right? We express the passion by talking about it all the time. And if you've talked to my son at all about, well, anything, and he's started off, you will know he's very passionate about Pokemon. Very at length, with many, many words, for hours on end, passionate about Pokemon. Eventually that will pass, but we get excited about that. But over time, that level of enthusiasm shifts. The passion maybe shifts a little bit. We don't talk about it so much anymore. We don't spend all our time when we're not with that other person thinking about that other person. It shifts. It doesn't mean that we are less engaged. It doesn't mean that we care less. It doesn't mean that we are really less passionate. It just means that how that's expressed has shifted. It maybe is that we have developed a deeper appreciation for that person or that activity. We just don't need to talk about it as much. And this is what Osborne is talking about. He is suggesting that our level of spirituality, or our following of God, if you will, isn't based on trying to get back to that initial excitement of starting our faith new. Right? He's not saying that, oh boy, you know, you've been believers for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it's kind of stagnant a little bit. Your passion's not there. You zip in your steps, just not going. You need more of that. If you could get back to what it was like when you first started, that's the enthusiasm we need. That's what we're looking for. That's not what this is about. See, that newish excitement often lacks depth, and it lacks experience, it lacks understanding. And we hope that as we spend more time following Jesus, that our relationship with him will grow deeper and will not just stay in that kind of Twitter-pated level akin to that first date. Right? It develops, but we don't need more of that first level of passion. We need obedience. We need understanding. We need depth in a relationship. And I'm not saying, and let's be clear, Osborne's not suggesting that passion or zeal for God is a bad thing. It just needs to be experienced differently. What we do have to be careful is that in our desire to be more committed to Jesus, or better Christians, that we don't, in our passion, forget about how he is really asking us to behave, and what he's really asking of us, again, out of obedience. Then we come to Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2, we come to the wonderful church in Ephesus, and here's a church that if you're reading this book, I mean, this is a fantastic letter. I know the things you do. I have seen your hard work and your patient endurance. I know you don't tolerate evil people. You've examined the claims of those who say they're apostles but are not. You have discovered they're liars. You have patiently suffered for me without quitting. You hate the evil deeds of the Nicolaitans. And this is, if this was translated into our time today, this is a church, you know, you guys are running the best programs. You're doing the best things. Your worship service is on point every single Sunday. Like, your pastor doesn't miss a beat. You guys are awesome. That's what this letter really starts with. You guys are great. But, and this is a big but, you know, so you think this is a church that's doing such a wonderful, good things. But Jesus says, but I have this complaint against you, and it's such a big complaint that if you don't fix it, I'm going to remove your lampstand. You are going to cease to be church sort of thing for me. I'm going to take you out of my body. Kind of like cutting off my arm. He is that concerned about this complaint to the church in Ephesus, who seems to be doing all the right stuff. So the thing that the church in Ephesus has missed, the church in the community of Ephesus has forgotten about in all of this, isn't their enthusiasm, it isn't their passion, it isn't their energy, it isn't any of these things. They're great programming. They have forgotten their first love. Now, often when we skim through this and we read it through, and I like the way the NLT has put it, but in other translations we miss it a little bit, we get this interpretation idea that the church has forgotten their first love. The first love is God. You know, Jesus is saying, you've forgotten about me. You're doing all these great programs, and I love what's happening here, but you've forgotten to put me at the center of it, and that's not really the case. That's not the case of what's happening in this book. They haven't forgotten about God. They aren't program-centric, that the program has become so important to them. They haven't lost their love of God. What they've forgotten about is what God calls them to be as people. Not about running programs, but about loving one another. And the word love that's used in Revelation 2 is the word agape, that brotherly love, that concern for one another. They have forgotten about the love about love for others and for Jesus, Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You know that famous love passage that always comes out at weddings and nowhere else? So Jesus is saying in this passage, it doesn't matter how good we do in Revelation, it doesn't matter how good we do, if we don't have loving others as the priority, it's just so much noise. And that comes from obedience. That comes in the space of obedience. So refocusing our understanding, if we're refocusing in our relationship with Jesus, knowing God on new levels, understanding what that is about for us in our spiritual life, isn't about passion, being more passionate. That's not the point. It includes passion, but it isn't driven by zeal or passion. It's coming back to the calling to love first God, then others, that Jesus commanded of us. It's about obedience. And that obedience can sometimes be full of fervor and zeal, or if you're not a fervorous, zealous person, it can be with quiet conviction, faithful presence. So following God isn't about thinking we need more faith. You know, more faith because we don't have enough, or to be more passionate, although we don't know what to be passionate about sometimes. It's about obedience. Obediently following God's plan for your life, even if you can't see how it will all shake out in the end. God doesn't call us to do more church. He calls us to be more church. Love God. Love people. He says it right here. I have this complaint against you. You don't love me or each other as you did at first. Look at how far you have fallen. Turn back to me and do the works you did at first. Your programs aren't bad, but you've forgotten the central point. Have faith and obedience for this. I encourage you, take a moment or two this week, ponder the questions that are in the sermon notes page in the bulletin there. Wrestle with them, and then maybe use them as a conversation point. Use them as a jumping off point to share with one another in your GLC group, or to maybe, as we said earlier this morning at 9:30, you know, just phone somebody up in the church and say, "How you doing? I would like to share with you how I've been wrestling through this stuff, all these questions." Encourage one another, challenge one another, and journey with one another in faith, in obedience, and passion together. You don't need more of it. You just need to work within it. Let's pray together.